Cisco Portland appreciates its partnership with the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association in presenting their inaugural podcasts, Boiled Down. Cisco strives to be our customers' most valued and trusted business partner by delivering great products with exceptional service.
Welcome to Boiled Down, the podcast for the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, or ORLA. I'm your host, Greg Astley, Director of Government Affairs. I want to thank you for listening today. Our guest is Rich Meneghello. He's an attorney with Fisher Phillips, LLP. We'll be talking about some of the issues related to our new administration, the new president, and the new labor secretary. Before we get to that, though, I wanted to give you some update on some of the important issues that are affecting our industry, including tip pooling. And just to give everybody a little bit of background, we did get an extension on the tip pooling case. There will be no enforcement until at least January 19th. So we have a 45-day extension to institute changes to mandatory tip pooling. Previous deadline was December 5th to remove any mandatory tip pooling practices that you might have had before you would have been subject to agency review or penalty. So restaurants are free from the Department of Labor review or penalty until January 19th. It may also be extended further depending on Supreme Court action. However, this does not change the ability of individual employees to take legal action against you as an employer, so you need to be aware of that. You are advised to seek guidance from legal counsel to assess and understand your options due to the complexity of the issue. And if you have questions or would like more information on this, you can contact me at 503-682-4422 or astley@oregonrla.org. The next issue we wanted to give you an update on is what we call lodging tax creep. We do have a statewide lodging tax, and many cities and municipalities have lodging taxes as well. Sometimes, though, cities or counties enact new taxes, new lodging taxes, and several that we've heard about recently have been the city of Forest Grove is thinking about one, as is the city of Hillsboro. And the city of Tigard is potentially looking at those. I've met with the mayors from both Forest Grove and Tigard to talk about that. And most importantly, we want to make sure that you, as our lodging operator members, have the opportunity to weigh in on those taxes and what the money might be spent on. Oftentimes, there are other alternatives that we can discuss with mayors and city managers as to how they can find other pots of money rather than coming after the lodging tax again. Speaking of taxes, Councilor Steve Novick from the Portland City Council was able to successfully pass his CEO tax in Portland. Now, it's based on EEO1 reports, and we will be talking more about that later in the podcast, so that may or may not hold up at this point. But essentially, the tax says that if a CEO is making 100 times more than the median income of his employees, they'll be subject to an additional tax that the city of Portland would collect. So more information on that as we get it and as we see changes potentially to the EEO1 reports coming from the federal government. Finally, we wanted to give you an update on something important that's come up recently with the Oregon Health Authority, and that is the change to the definition of an enclosed area. It's eliminated some smoking porches for people and has caused some confusion around it. We are challenging that and meeting with folks from the Oregon Health Authority to discuss how the change was made, why it was made, and if you are assessed a fine by the Oregon Health Authority because of it, please contact ORLA and let us know. And again, astley@oregonrla.org or 503-682-4422. So with that, we're going to move right into our guest, Rich Meneghello from Fisher Phillips here. And Rich is going to help us talk about the new administration. We've got a new president-elect who happens to be a business owner, a hotelier, and someone who understands what it means to sign the front of a paycheck. So, Rich, thanks for being here today. Just generally and kind of broadly speaking, what does it mean to have Donald Trump as the new president?
Is that you're asking for my personal opinion or professional one?
Well, give us both. Why not?
Well, you know, I'll start this way. I was doing a live radio interview on the election night, and it was around 8:45 or 9 p.m., right when it seemed like things were tilting in Trump's favor. And I'm speaking to somebody, and I can't remember which station it was, one of the Portland stations, and I said, well, and then under President-elect Trump, employers will, and I literally stopped in the middle of the live interview and said, wow, I can't believe I just said that out loud. Just because, you know, now I guess it's been over a month and the shock has sort of worn off, just from how surprising it was for all of us, especially those of us who are trying to predict what this means for an industry and for employers. So, you know, setting aside anyone's personal beliefs or personal thoughts about President-elect Trump or his, and there it is again, you know, just saying it is a little odd, or his beliefs, his views, his philosophies. As a business owner in the hospitality arena, this is just about a dream scenario. You have somebody in the White House who is, like you say, a hotelier, and we're going to have, and we'll talk about, the new Secretary of Labor who is in the restaurant industry. You know, you could not have scripted something better for those in the restaurant industry, especially for those of us in a state that's not necessarily as business friendly as others are. So, again, you know, setting aside your personal philosophy as a business owner or a manager in the hospitality industry, this is a home run.
So, and President-elect Trump has the opportunity to work with a Republican majority in Congress. You've got a Republican House, you've got a Republican Senate. You've got an opportunity to put somebody, at least one justice, on the Supreme Court. How do you think some of those things are going to affect the hospitality industry, being that he's not going to have some of the blockage that President Obama has had in the past?
Right. You know, it's this is going to be the frustrating part of today's podcast is I'm sure I'm going to say this a number of times. We might count it up the number of times I say it, but gosh, it's going to be unpredictable here. There's so many things about Trump that are truly difficult to pin down because he has different streaks that he takes. On the one hand, he's a business owner, and so he is going to tilt more, you would assume, towards management than he would towards labor, certainly compared to our current administration. But yet there's also a pragmatic streak with him that has shown through in lots of ways, his populist stance that's going to appeal to a lot of middle-class Americans and especially workers. And he certainly can count on give something back to labor, organized labor, not necessarily big labor itself, but the workers who comprise unions who really probably handed him the victory in those key Rust Belt states. So when you talk about him lining up and his administration lining up with Congress, you know, if this were a typical Republican, if this were just about any other of the Republican nominees, you would say, wow, you know, they're going to be in lockstep and they're going to do just fine and pass a lot of measures together. But he's already demonstrated that he is not afraid to take on members of his own quote unquote party, and that solid Republicans are not afraid to take him on either. So just because he has got a congressional slate that lines up in his party's favors doesn't necessarily mean he's going to get everything he wants.
Okay.
Which will be quite different for him, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Well, so let's talk about what he does have a little more control over, which is his cabinet. And we've already talked a little bit about the new labor secretary. So that's going to be Andrew Puzder, who's CEO of CKE Holdings, Carl's Jr., Hardee's, Green Burrito, for those of you who don't know who he is.
You can Google their TV advertisements right now if you want to get a taste for what this guy's like, I'm sure.
So you've got somebody who's coming in as the labor secretary who, again, leans more management than labor, and who's got some very definitive ideas, I think, about how things should be done. But talk to me a little bit about professionally where you see the new labor secretary, if he's confirmed by the Senate, where you see him coming down on some issues.
Sure. You know, another reason why, like I said earlier, this is a home run for employers is you've got somebody who's been in the trenches. I mean, up through right now, CEO of a massive restaurant property for the past 15 years, one that has gone through all the kinds of ins and outs of daily operational life that most of our listeners probably go through, whether it's franchise operations, labor disputes, making payroll, those things. it's a real boon for the industry, because we've got somebody here who knows what it's like to run a restaurant and knows the kind of pains that restaurant owners and hospitality employers go through. We also, even though he's never been in government before, we've got a treasure trove of information about what his personal philosophies are regarding all sorts of issues in the workplace law arena. He is a frequent commenter on Fox Business News, and he writes op-eds in Forbes and the Wall Street Journal. So it's very easy for us to sort of glean what we think he's going to be like as Labor Secretary. And mm-hmm. he's not been shy when it comes to voicing his opinion on lots of the kinds of issues that people like me pay attention to on a daily basis.
That's great. So let's talk about some of those issues specifically. We got a little list here of some things that may be different, maybe the same in the new administration with the new Labor Secretary. Let's start with one that we've been talking a lot about at our regional conversations, which is the new overtime regulation.
Sure.
There were a couple of bills introduced in Congress to delay or phase in the implementation of that. Now we do have a delay, thanks to a judge in Texas. I mean, what do you see as the future of the overtime regulation? Is that going to be repealed completely? Are we going to see a different version of that, do you think, with the new administration?
So the current version of the overtime rule, I would say it's not dead, but it's on life support. You know, like you've said, it's right now in a limbo period where there was a block put on it by a federal court judge. And interestingly, the Department of Labor, which is the defendant in that case, asked for an expedited briefing schedule on the appeal that they filed in order to try to overturn that block. But the briefing is not going to be complete until Trump's in the White House and Puzzer is sitting behind the desk of the Labor Department, which is quite interesting to me, because they very could well on day one just say, well, you know, I think we're done with this appeal. And we could see an immediate action that would stop that rule from going into effect much longer. Now, if they want to revise the rule, or if the Court of Appeals somehow breathes new life into this rule, it won't just be with a snap of the fingers that Puzder and Trump can revise or overturn the rule. With any rules-making process at the federal level, it requires a very long process involving producing a draft rule, a commenting and hearings process, and a finalization process. It could take upwards of a year. So that's what we anticipate if the Court of Appeals again breathes new life into this and resurrects the rule. Whether or not that's going to happen is anyone's guess. Just a few days ago, a worker advocacy group in Texas filed a motion. The AFL-CIO filed a motion in the Texas case to try to essentially step in the shoes of the Department of Labor, anticipating that on January 20th, it's going to be a brand new Department of Labor.
Sure.
Now, whether or not they get the right to sit in, that's up in the air right now as well. I would say, you know, when you look at Puzder's view of it, he is very, very clear. He thinks that the rule is a sham. It's ill-conceived. He stated that doing this rule would, and his exact words were, it would unnecessarily turn management positions into hourly jobs where employees are compensated for time spent rather than time well spent. He doesn't like this rule. If he has anything to do with it, if the rule gets resurrected as after he's in office, it will be changed. It will just take time.
Okay.
And that's difficult. It's a difficult proposition for employers right now. You're in this limbo period, right? On the one hand, you've been prepping for months. People like us, people like you have been telling everyone, get ready, make your changes quickly. And then on the eve of it going into effect, the 11th hour, the rug gets pulled out from under us in a shocking, shocking decision. So if you've already made the changes, any good employer is not going to take money back from their workers and not say, well, that raise you got last week, it's not into effect anymore. And the other concern we have is, what if the appeals court steps in and says, nope, we're overturning that decision. The injunction's out of the way. The rule's in effect. And in fact, it should have been in effect as of December 1. So employers, you should have been in compliance since December 1. And you have to step back and make things up and make things right by your employees. That could happen as well. It's, like I said, here's the second time I'm saying it. It's really uncertain as to what will happen.
Sure.
But it's a scary time for employers just because of the uncertainty.
Well, it's one of the reasons why, Rich, we look forward to having you come back. And once we have a little bit better idea of what the administration's going to do and what some of these new rules look like, We can get your opinion on them then.
Yeah.
I know we have been hearing from members who have spent months working on, you know, models of how this will affect their businesses. And in most cases, they've just had to implement them at this case. And like you said, you're not going to take the money back. But certainly, we'll keep people updated. They can always go to our website, OregonRLA.org, for that kind of information. Subscribe to our e-newsletter. Get alerts from us that way. So we'll keep them up to date on that kind of information as well. Moving on to the next issue, pay equity. And so is that still going to be an important issue, you think, in this administration?
Well, I've talked to some colleagues of mine in my firm who focus on pay equity issues. And so, maybe this isn't surprising, but there's a split in opinion as to what will happen with pay equity under Trump. So there's with this big difference of opinion, some people predict that the Trump's anti-regulation stance will carry through when it comes to pay equity, and he will be aggressively against the kinds of rules necessary to implement pay equity on a national scale. Others think that he has some courting to do of the women vote, where he was not necessarily as strong of a candidate during his campaign, and maybe said some things and did some things that rubbed female voters the wrong way. And so a lot of people think that that he will then take efforts to bridge the gap by advancing pay equity as one of his tenets. So whether he takes either of those approaches, who knows? But I think, locally, this is one of these areas where even if Trump takes a very pro-employer, pro-management stance, you're going to see the states and local jurisdictions step in and be that charging force, the driving force behind pay equity initiatives. And Oregon is certainly not immune from that. And we've already seen some proposed pay equity statutes that might be passed here at the local level.
And related to that, I know the EEO-1 reports that have the wage and compensation on it, we've talked about it a little bit in our advocacy watch, the CEO tax that was recently passed in the city of Portland by the Portland City Council there. Those are using those EEO-1 reports to try to figure out what that tax might look like. Where do you see that fitting into the picture? Are those still going to be required? Is that going to change somehow with the new administration?
Sure. So let's start where we are right now. Let's say nothing changes and the status quo holds. As of right now, employers need to be very sure that their compensation levels with respect to gender and other protected classes appear equal when it comes to overall levels or differences that can't be otherwise justified due to location or position and those sorts of things. If there are disparities, it's concerning time for employers, because as of January 1, 2017, those compensation levels are going to be under a microscope like never before. And that's because as of March 2018, which seems very far away, you know, we might have flying cars by then and all that, but it's right around the corner. By March 2018, you're going to have to file reports with the federal government that list out compensation levels broken down by gender and these other categories, which means, again, your compensation structure in just a few weeks' time is going to be under scrutiny like you've never faced before. Now, so that's where we are right now, if nothing changes. And that's a rule that was put in place by the EEOC with President Obama's blessing. If Andy Puzder, well, in the Department of Labor, even though the Department of Labor got this rolling, but the EEOC ran with it. But more importantly, if Donald Trump disagree with this and think it's overregulation and information and a burden that employers don't need to bear, they will need to start a whole rules-making process in order to revise or scrap it, and that could take plenty of time. So our advice right now for employers is to act as if this is going to go into effect. Do an audit right now. Hire a labor attorney, an employment attorney, to do it with you so that if you do uncover some concerning issues, your sort of investigation into your own compensation structure might be covered by an attorney-client privilege. looking for things that can't be justified otherwise and might look really bad in these forms, so that you're ready and able to produce this information with confidence, knowing that you're not going to be under attack by the government or plaintiff's attorneys that might take advantage of these disparities. Now, you mentioned the Portland CEO tax. As I understand it, part of the way in which this information that Steve Novick wants to gather would be gathered is through the revised and beefed up EEO-1 form. So if that EEO-1 form is scrapped or revised in some way not to include all that information, it'll be a challenge for Portland to implement that CEO tax the way they currently envision implementing it.
Well, that would be good news for some of our members, certainly. So when we talk about other issues from federal to state, obviously there are some differences in what the federal government's asking for, what the state of Oregon's already doing. One of those areas is the federal OSHA. And so just getting to that issue, are there any significant changes there that you see that would affect business owners?
Yeah, there are two huge ones that happened in 2016 that employers need to know about if they haven't already. And ones that could end up changing under Trump and under Puzder. Federal OSHA does fall under DOL, the Department of Labor. So this is something under his control. The two changes are, first, a record-keeping rule that sounds pretty benign, but in practice is pretty hairy and burdensome for employers. It contains a few hidden landmines that a lot of employers might be unaware of. One, not only does it increase reporting requirements of the kinds of incidents that happen at the workplace that you have to report, but at the same time, once the information is reported electronically, the government intends to post this on their public website for everyone to see. Now, the information that would attribute it or link it to specific people would be removed, so it's not like John Smith hurt his finger or something like that, but there'll be enough information on there that people will be able to critique your business for your workplace safety record in a way they've never been able to do before. Moreover, this record-keeping rule, the way it's being interpreted currently by OSHA, does some things that many employers are unaware of. So, for example, it went into effect just a couple weeks ago, December 1. Currently, OSHA interprets employers' mandatory post-accident drug testing policies as being per se illegal. Now, upwards of 75% of employers have some sort of mandatory post-accident drug testing system in place. And I'm going to guess the large majority of them don't realize that as of today, OSHA considers them illegal and makes employers jump through additional hoops before sending people to drug tests. So that's one big classification of rules that we could easily see Puzder and Trump sweeping aside or revising. Another one is in 2016, a massive penalty increase went into effect for safety violations, upwards of 80% increase to various penalties. So that is, according to our OSHA experts in our firm, likely to be revoked as well. But for now, employers are living in a new and sort of scary world under OSHA that is not only burdening them to a greater extent, but punishing them to a much greater extent than ever before.
Great. Well, Rich, thanks. That's a good place for us, I think, to take a short break, hear from one of our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Cisco Portland thanks you from the heart of food and service for your dedication to culinary hospitality. We also appreciate our ongoing partnership with the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. Together, we'll shape the future of food service in the Northwest and help operators grow. Want to be a Cisco customer? Visit www.ciscoportland.com.
All right, welcome back to Boiled Down, Orla's podcast. We're here with Rich Menegello, who's an attorney at law at Fisher & Phillips, LLP. And we've been talking about the new administration, President-elect Donald Trump, the new Labor Secretary, Andy Puzder, and what some of the changes we might be seeing in the future. Wanted to talk briefly about employment leave. In the state of Oregon, obviously, we just passed paid sick leave this last session. And now there's a lot of talk at the state legislative level about paid family leave. How do you think what might be proposed at the federal level is going to compare to what we might see here in Oregon?
Well, you know, any time that, well, let me take a step back. Trump has, this is one of these areas where he's a little bit more pragmatic in terms of appealing to the middle class and working families than others on the GOP side might have been. And even though he hasn't released specifics about it, shockingly, he seems to be on record supporting some sort of family leave. On a national paid family leave on a national level. So we'll see what actually comes from his administration on that. Employers in Oregon might wonder, well, why do I have to worry about it since we already have it here? I think the main reason I would be on the lookout for this sort of stuff is because Oregon, like some of the other more progressive states on the West Coast and elsewhere, usually like to be a little bit ahead of where the floor is. And so if the federal, right now the federal government doesn't have any paid leave, and we do. If federal level brings it up to somewhere around Oregon's level, I wouldn't be surprised to see Oregon then want to jack it up a little bit more.
Sure.
So that's why it's, like you say, there are certain things being bandied about that would give employers even more greater rights and greater leave rights. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happens, and that's why we're monitoring it. Just to make sure that we know where, sort of try to get a gauge on where Oregon might take us.
Okay. And obviously, again, we'll keep you updated on what's going on, both at the state level and the federal level. You can always go to our website, OregonRLA.org. You can follow us on Twitter and, of course, sign up for our e-newsletters and alerts. Let's talk about immigration. Are we going to have a wall between Mexico and the United States?
Well, I think there's a wall between Trump and Puzder on immigration is one way to put it. You know, obviously Trump built the cornerstone of his campaign was on immigration, right? And he, very aggressive rhetoric in many ways. Puzder met him match for match during the campaign. Now, Puzder, for those of you who don't know, was one of Trump's senior advisors on the campaign. So he had his ear, certainly. And while doing so, he wrote an op-ed where he specifically said that this deportation plan of Trump's, where he would want to deport up to 11 million undocumented workers, was unworkable. And he wanted Trump to tone down his position and change it. He specifically said that he believes immigrant workers are an asset to this country. Obviously not surprising. Somebody who runs a restaurant as large as Puzder did, recognizes the value of immigrant labor, and also recognizes the issues that come running a restaurant, running a hotel, and having issues, whether it's issues involving undocumented workers or mismatched letters or similar problems. So that's now taking a step back. Puzder's DOL doesn't have a ton to do with immigration. There are certain small areas, green cards, visas, where they implement and they help set policy, but it'll really be Trump setting the agenda here, Trump and the Department of Homeland Security. So our hope is that he takes a more pragmatic stance, and it seems like he's softened his stance a little bit, Trump has, since he's been elected. And as somebody in this industry, we hope that Puzder would have his ear and would get him again to tone down some of this rhetoric and get him to look at it from a more pragmatic standpoint, which would obviously be a win for those in the hospitality industry.
Well, as you said, 11 million undocumented immigrants, certainly some of them, I'm sure, are working in related industries here. And so this could be an issue that would impact our state, our industry. And
no
so it's one that we'll be watching very closely. So let's talk a little bit now about joint employment and how that might work.
Sure. Yeah, you know, this is one that some folks might be a little bit surprised at. This is one of these slow awakening giants, I guess you would say. It started a couple of years ago. The National Labor Relations Board, which is the government agency that oversees union management relations, started taking some stances that were very pro-worker. Not surprising at all. This is one of these agencies that the pendulum will swing back and forth depending on who's in the White House. And sometimes it takes a few years after these executive appointments are made before that philosophy starts coming down in the guidance they release, the enforcement actions they take, the decisions they issue. And we started to see a cascading number of cases in the last few years that demonstrate the fact that the National Labor Relations Board, the NLRB, has decided that joint employment is one of the areas they want to tackle. And big picture, what they would like is to see a greater number of people join unions. And one of the ways in which they think this can be accomplished is by viewing, from a legal standpoint, workers from different entities being combined in a joint employment definition to then form a union collectively. And how this could impact employers and hotels is through the franchise relationship. Those of you out there who are in a franchise relationship, you might have your workers join with the franchisor employees and the franchisee employees join together to form bargaining units. That could be much more difficult to deal with than just a smaller unit in your own shop. Now, this is one of these agencies that, again, Trump has a lot of control over, but it will take time for any impact of it to come down, or his appointments to render some rulings and come down. So the first shoe fell really last summer. Another shoe fell earlier this summer in terms of the NLRB's position on these things. And so for right now, employers who are in joint employment relationships really need to be nervous about the way the NLRB is going to perceive them and regarding organizing campaigns that might be happening under their nose.
Is the NLRB board, is that somebody that's appointed by the administration? Or
yes.
Okay,
yeah,
so they're
a series of board members.
Okay, so might there be some changes during Trump's administration to that?
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely. And it's required to be a balance between Republican, Democrat appointees, but whoever's in power gets the majority share. So there are usually lots of 3-2 rulings of the NLRB.
Sure.
And there have been lots on the D side in the past 8 years, and there will be lots on the R side in the next at least 4 years.
Right. Okay. Great. Well, I wanted to bring up a very little known area, I guess. It's the Office of Labor Management Standards, the
right.
OLMS, which is probably not something that a lot of people have heard about. I have to admit that it was new to me as well.
Sure.
And so it's one of those kind of little known offices within the government, but it could potentially have a pretty big impact. Can you talk a little bit about how it might impact the workplace for our members?
Yeah, absolutely. So OLMS is underneath the Department of Labor. Those listening right now who have unions in your workplace, you might not even know about them. And those of you who are not unionized, you're going to want to know about them. So file this away and just remember that there's this agency out there that does a rather boring sounded mission. A boring sounding mission, which is to manage the receipt of funds by labor unions, which really sounds very esoteric and again, a lot of bureaucratic red tape. Who cares? But here's where it gets interesting. You might not be aware that your local union or the local unions of those groups that might be trying to organize your workplaces, they're required by federal law to complete a very thorough audit of their finances and file it in public records. And the more scrutiny that the OLMS has over these audit forms, the better. It's better for employers because we're then able to turn around and show our employees, look at where your hard-earned money is going to. Your union dues that you pay, if you look in this form, wow, it looks like this money is being wasted on this, that, and the other. Now, under President Obama, there wasn't a lot of scrutiny on OLMS, and I think it was a 40% reduction in force. It was really an agency that didn't have a lot of teeth. Under Puzder and Obama, this could be a sleeping giant that's being awakened. And if resources are spent and power is given to OLMS, you could see a windfall of information from employers that will help them fend off union campaigns. And moreover, for those with existing unions, give it some time, give Puzder and Trump some time to beef up this agency, and you will now have in your hands a treasure trove of information that you could point out to your unionized members to say, wow, do you really think your union is giving you the best shake they can? It really, to me, appears as if some of your money is not being spent in ways that you originally signed up for. So my advice is, if you have a union, work with your attorney over the next year or so to revisit these forms so you can present an honest picture to your workforce. And if you're not unionized, just be ready to examine these forms if a campaign comes knocking on your door.
And as you mentioned, the transparency obviously is important to know where the money's going. Potentially could also have an impact, you think, on campaigns and how funds are being spent by unions there? Or is that a separate issue, you think?
Yeah, that's a bit of a separate issue. OLMS doesn't have any oversight regarding that. But you know, as you talk about in terms of unions and campaigns and their finances, there are some other areas in which perhaps we could explore in future podcasts where I think the Trump administration could have a massive impact on unions and their coffers, which will ultimately trickle all the way down to state legislatures and other political races. So, again, you know, when a president gets elected, there are thousands of small issues that will end up starting to bubble up over the couple of years that will impact workplaces and every aspect of business life. So we're just starting to poke away at the first layer of them, but there are many of them out there.
Great. Well, let's wrap up with one that is probably going to be important to a lot of folks out there, and that is the issue of marijuana and our new attorney general, how he might view marijuana in the states, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, some of those who have legalized it, and what that may change now that we've got the new administration.
Sure. You know, this is another one where there might be a bit of a disconnect or a difference of opinion between president and head of one of his appointees. So Trump is fairly progressive and has gone on the record saying that he's doesn't really take much of a position. It's not really against, you know, doesn't necessarily oppose legalized marijuana, whereas his attorney general has essentially made a career of opposing marijuana. He's Jeff Sessions has said, quote, good people don't smoke marijuana, and has called pot reform in across the states on the recreational and medical level a tragic mistake. So as of right now, there's no change to employers. Those of you in Oregon, even though obviously recreational marijuana is legal and medical marijuana is legal, you can continue to enforce your zero tolerance policies without much concern. Here's the concern. If Jeff Sessions steps in office and decides, you know what, I'm going to enforce federal law because marijuana remains illegal under the Controlled Substances Act, mm-hmm. federal statute, despite the fact it's legal in lots of different states, I'm going to enforce this federal statute and I'm going to take my resources and I'm going to raid a legal dispensary, and let's say it happens right here in Oregon, or it could happen in Colorado or Washington or anywhere. Overnight, that industry could dramatically change. Funding could dry up for it, and people could be very nervous about continuing to contribute to it. And then what you might see is a backlash. So those in Oregon who want to stand up even stronger for the rights of those who under state law should be permitted to ingest marijuana legally might decide to amend the law to offer greater protections for those who smoke marijuana. And it could include adding something to the state law that says those who smoke marijuana off-duty during off-duty hours as employees should not be terminated as long as they don't show up impaired at work. Mm. Or they should be, those with medical marijuana cards should be considered a protected class and protected under state law. That currently doesn't exist in Oregon. So it could place employers somewhere between a rock and a hard place if Sessions comes down with an iron fist on it. I'll say this for the last time on our podcast today. We're just going to have to wait and see. It's a bit unpredictable. But certainly, I guess the best way to look at it is I heard somebody said to me once Trump was elected, you know, may you live in interesting times. And we certainly do. And so there's certainly lots for us to talk about.
Absolutely. Well, Rich, thank you again so much for being here. We've got Rich Menegello, who's an attorney at law with Fisher Phillips. And if you'd like to get in touch with him, you can follow him on Twitter at PDX Labor Lawyer or go to FisherPhillips.com. Just a quick reminder, February 28th, we've got Orla's Capital Day. So we've been talking about a lot of things at the federal level, but there are going to be a lot of issues at the state level. And we want to give you the opportunity to come down, meet with your legislator, talk with some of the folks here at Orla about what are the important issues for our industries. And after the day at the Capitol, we do have our Taste Oregon Legislative Reception at the Salem Convention Center. We've talked a lot today about the unpredictability and uncertainty of what the future holds. And that includes the Affordable Care Act that may be replaced, repealed, or in some form or fashion changed. One way that you can protect yourself as an Orla member is with our Orla Health Plan. We've launched a new solution to healthcare coverage that's available exclusively for association members. There are three options where employers can extend a benefit to their employees, and it meets preventative care requirements. Those start in as little as $30 a month. Self-insured plans that carry low liabilities for participating ORLA member businesses. Now, for more information on this or to get a quote for your business, you can visit our website at OregonRLA.org/healthplan, or you can contact ORLA's endorsed provider, Garth Rouse and Associates, at 1-800-982-2012. Again, 1-800-982-2012. That's Garth Rouse and Associates. The ORLA Health Plan could be an affordable coverage solution for you and your employees. Here at Boiled Down, we're always looking for the next topic to talk about. There's a lot going on in our industry, but we want to hear from you. So send us your emails, send us your ideas. You can email us at info@OregonRLA.org and let us know what you'd like to hear us talk about. If you have an idea for a guest that we can interview, if you have an idea for a topic that you'd like us to talk about, send it to us. You can also follow us on Twitter at ORLA Boiled Down and see what we're talking about. If that gives you some ideas, fantastic. We'd love to hear from you. That's going to conclude this episode of ORLA's Boiled Down podcast. Again, you can contact us by email at info@OregonRLA.org. Follow us on Twitter at ORLA Boiled Down. And you can go to the web at OregonRLA.org for more information or to check out the frequently asked questions portion of the website. This is Greg Astley, your host and Director of Government Affairs for the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. Thank you for listening.
The associates of Sysco Portland know that life's celebrations bring the best meals, wonderful moments of fun, family, and food. Sysco trucks deliver flavor and culinary adventure to food service locations throughout Oregon and Southwest Washington. Want to become a Sysco customer? Visit www.syscoportland.com.